Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, comedian Sue Pandora over joke copyrights. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when the CMA published its provisional findings on Sony's AWOL deal.
Yes, that was a big development last week, although,
apparently,
as we record this podcast, that is still in the future. We've just been told it's coming. Apparently, the UK's Competition and Markets Authority, the competition regulator of the UK, is going to make its provisional ruling about Sony's, some would say, controversial acquisition of AWOL off Cobalt as we're recording this podcast. But because it hasn't happened yet, we're not in a position to talk about it.
No. We could talk about the Brit Awards, though. That also happened last week.
And that is definitely past tense, even as we record the podcast.
It is. It is. I watched it on the TV. It definitely happened.
I did not watch it on the TV. I didn't go. I didn't interact with it through social media. So everything I know about the Brit Awards this year was what you wrote in the CMU Daily the next day. Oh, no, that's not true. I saw some old people on Facebook moaning about how there's no good music anymore and it's all rappers and it's all PC and woke and they wanted the best female category. Basically, a lot of moaning, whining people in my Facebook feed.
What a load of idiots.
What a load of idiots. And so, based on all of their moaning in my Facebook feed, my conclusion was, it was quite a good edition of the Brit Awards this year.
It was fine. It was all right. Yeah. It was, it didn't have Jack Whitehall presenting it, which I was quite excited about. And then I sort of missed him because I thought Mo Gilligan would be quite good and funny. But actually, I think he had a sort of reverence for the Brit Awards that meant that he couldn't really mock it because he's a former Brit school kid. I know Jack Whitehall, for all his faults, did always mock it with glee. And yeah, that didn't happen. I missed that.
But it's not really about the host, is it, the Brit Awards? Surely, as a night celebrating the best in British and international music, what matters is who won awards and who sung some songs.
Yes. Well, it opened with Ed Sheeran performing with Bring Me the Horizon. So that was quite a big, bold opening. That was something. You know, metal version of Bad Habits. It was interesting, watching Ollie Sykes sort of swagging around the stage in his Ollie Sykes swaggering way. While also, he was standing next to Ed Sheeran singing an Ed Sheeran song, so it didn't feel like it warranted any sort of swaggering. But he did it nonetheless. You know, he's not ashamed to perform with Ed Sheeran. Maybe then that's good, I suppose. You know, apparently they're working on music together now as well, so maybe there's more. I did feel sorry for Cradle of Filth because, you know, it was Cradle of Filth who was talking about how they were going to work with Ed Sheeran not that long ago, and then suddenly Bring Me the Horizon are there doing it. So we'll see. Maybe Ed Sheeran's doing a whole metal album with lots of people.
And that was just the first little view of the many, many metal collaborations to come from Ed Sheeran. Yeah, because that was an interview last year, wasn't it, where he was saying, was that Ed Sheeran saying he wanted to do metal music and he was a Cradle of Filth fan? Or was it Cradle of Filth commenting? What was that? I can't remember.
Ed Sheeran said something in an interview about how he'd, you know, he was been really into metal when he was younger and he liked bands like Cradle of Filth. And then I think Danny Filth from Cradle of Filth made a joke about it on Instagram and then somehow they ended up talking and it got onto the possibility of them working together. I can't remember exactly now.
But alas, not on the Brit Awards stage.
No.
In terms of winners, Adele kind of won everything, is that right?
She won 3 out of 4 awards that she was nominated for. But like you sort of mentioned just now, they got rid of all the gendered awards this year. So there are awards for things like Best Artist rather than Best Male and Best Female, as if, you know, like, there's this massive difference between the two and they couldn't possibly be thought of in the same category. And obviously lots of people said, well, of course, if women aren't nominated in their own categories. No women will win awards, but women won basically all of the awards. So that proved to be wrong. And yeah, and it was obviously, you know, the joke that everyone made beforehand, and I suppose I made as well, I suppose I did several times, was that that Adele would come along and win everything. But she, you know, there were awards that Adele did not win.
Best group, for example?
She didn't win that, no. Or best new artist.
Or best international. Basically, she won anything she was eligible for. Although you said that she didn't win all the four she was nominated. So there must have been something she was eligible for that she didn't win.
I think... Oh, now you're asking me to remember what that is. do we have time to look it up? Probably not.
No. Best something.
You can Google it if you're that interested. It was, yeah, something she was up for. I don't remember what. It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't.
I think she won Best Album. I mean, I got kind of... I lost interest in the last half an hour or so. So I think she won Best Album. But, yeah. It got... Yeah, the last part of it was a bit dull. The first half was the best bit, where you had all stuff... I mean, I'd say the star of the night was Little Sims, who not only did, I think, the best performance, but also the best acceptance speech. Partly because she brought her mum up on stage and who was very excited, and that was fun. And then she gave a speech about how she was an independent artist, completely independent. She's distributed through Piast, but she runs her own labels. Everything, you know, she's not, you know, it's always like, you know, it's always thought that it's major label artists who win the Brits, but actually she's completely, completely independent. And that's very exciting. And she was saying, you know, I'm proof here that if you work hard, you can get here and do this and be on this stage. And so that was good.
Interestingly, at last year's Artist and Manager Awards, which is the one awards event I usually go to, Little Sims got an award there. She wasn't actually able to make it in person because I think she was doing a show somewhere. So she sent a video message. But at that event, her mum was there. And in that case, the mum actually picked up the award because she wasn't in the building. And that was, in my opinion, the highlight of that awards show. So Little Sims' mum has now been the highlight of two recent music industry awards shows.
Yes. I mean, it was interesting. She won Best New Artist when she's been around for ages. But, you know, such is the nature of awards.
Well, I suppose that's what they... I think that's what they used to call breakthrough artists, isn't it? And they've rebranded it as... Because they have... Do they still call it Critics' Choice or did they change the name of that one as well?
No, Rising Star. It's been Rising Star for a few years now.
But that's the one for sort of super new talent, isn't it? So the best new artist is a bit of a misleading name. But, so, you're saying Little Sims, best performance, best speech. Was there anything else worthy of note? You were slightly down on Liam Gallagher and you're right up.
Liam Gallagher's new single is not good. Even if it's written by Dave Grohl, it is not good. And they tried to distract from that by him arriving in a helicopter and wearing a really stupid hat and having the most amazing light show of the whole night. But you still could not get over the fact that that song is not good.
And you said you kind of lost interest in the latter part, but wasn't Dave the finale? Was that not good?
Oh, Dave was really good. I've got a whole other gripe that didn't get into my report on this. Dave was really, really good. And my interest picked up again when that was the final performance. But for some reason, the live feed on the ITV player cut off. And when I tried to go back in, because I wasn't watching it completely live, I was about half an hour behind, it said, this program's not available anymore. You can't watch it. And I said, but I wanted to watch the rest of that. But the ITV player, for many reasons, I've never used it before. It's very annoying. When they put the advert breaks in, it's not the advert breaks on the TV. It's like within the app, so you can't skip through them. And I was like, I started half an hour late and I was like, well, at least I'll be able to catch up with the live feed because I'll be able to skip through the adverts. But then I couldn't. I had to watch them all. And that was very irritating.
Well, obviously, specifically designed for that purpose. But anyway, I think that is everything that needs to be said about this year's Brit Awards. Well done, everybody. If you enjoyed it, you enjoyed it. If you hated it and you spent all night moaning on social media, I suspect actually you quite enjoyed that. So everyone's a winner, apart from Adele, who didn't win all the awards she was nominated for. So was the main loser of the evening. Is that the summary?
Yes. Poor Adele. Where did it all go wrong for her?
But, and this is really important, and I cannot stress this enough, we're not here on this week's edition of Setlist to talk about the bloody Brit Awards.
We're really not. No, we just don't have time because I've got ghosting. Right. Now, later on, we've got an update on the hit piece NFT website story that we spoke about last week. But first, let's talk about some lawsuits involving comedians, which I realise isn't technically the remit of Setlist as a music business podcast, but these are interesting copyright cases involving streaming services, and copyright and streaming are things we talk about on this podcast, and it means we get to talk about Spotify without mentioning Joe Rogan, which I think we can all agree at this point is a good thing. So, three comedians and the estates of Robin Williams and George Carlin have all sued Pandora over allegations that the American streaming service is streaming comedy routines by those performers without all the proper licenses in place.
Yes. Now, we should note that Pandora, the American streaming service, does have some licenses in place to stream the comedy of people like Andrew Dice Clay, Bill Engvall, Ron White, and of course, Robin Williams and George Carlin. So those are the comedians slash states that are involved in this litigation. However, the licenses that Pandora has are with the labels or distributors or companies that control the copyright in the recordings of those comedians' performances. And regular listeners to this here Setlist podcast will know that when it comes to music on the streaming services, the services need to get two sets of licenses. So they have one license for the recording rights in any one track on the service, but then another license covering the separate, distinct song copyright, i.e. the copyright in the lyrics and the musical composition that is contained within the track. So basically what's going on here is that the comedians are arguing that their recordings, the recordings of their comedy shows, also contain two copyrights. One in the recording itself, and another in the words of the routine, the jokes and whatever else it is they say during the show. Now, the latter, the copyright in the words, would be legally speaking what we would call a literary work, which is in essence the spoken word equivalent of what in music we generally refer to as the song rights. And the key thing is that the streaming services, so Pandora in the case of this litigation, although almost certainly this is true for all streaming services, they do not have licenses that cover the literary work element.
The lawsuits filed against Pandora on this issue explain all that as follows. Just like with music, there are two copyrights involved in the recorded performance of a literary copyrighted work, a copyright in the sound recording and a separate copyright in the underlying spoken word composition. Under US copyright law, they add, copyright owners have the exclusive right to, among other things, reproduce, distribute, license and publicly perform their works. Anyone wishing to obtain the right to do so must get a license from the respective copyright owner in both of these copyrights and pay agreed to royalties. The failure to do so constitutes copyright infringement.
Now, these lawsuits that were filed last week are not a surprise because the debate around the licensing of comedy recordings by streaming services has been gaining momentum in the last couple of years, mainly because a couple of new companies were launched specifically to represent the literary work copyrights of comedians in the digital domain. These two companies, both based out of America, are called Word Collections, which is led by Jeff Price, who you might have come across before as the founder of companies like TuneCore and Audiam, and then another company called Spoken Giants, which has been launched by a comedy label called 800 Pound Gorilla Records in collaboration with a guy who used to work at the US Songwriters Collecting Society, BMI. Both of those startup businesses recognise that, unlike in the music community, the comedy community isn't as clued up about copyright matters. So if you imagine how bored artists and songwriters get and how confused they are about how copyright works, quadruple that, and that's how comedians feel. Actually, I would say artists and songwriters probably are aware because their collecting societies and trade bodies are constantly telling them that they should be aware of how copyright works and various issues around copyright, but they're not. Whereas I suspect a lot, most comedians aren't even aware it's something they should be thinking about and learning about. So what these two companies recognised was, because copyright matters are not generally talked about in the comedy community in the way they are in the music community, most comedians who had recordings of their performances on the streaming services, where the label or distributor in control of those recordings had licensed the recording rights, those comedians almost certainly were not going after royalties for the literary work element of that comedy.
So this whole thing came to wider attention late last year when a whole load of comedy recordings, including albums from people like John Mulaney, Jim Gaffigan, Kevin Hart, disappeared from Spotify, seemingly because Spoken Giant had been pushing the streaming firm to negotiate a licensing deal covering the literary works of the comedians it now represents. Shortly after that happened, one affected comedian, Gianmarco Ceresi, shared a note he'd received from Spoken Giants on Twitter that read, "It appears that Spotify has started to take down comedy as a category, affecting your works and the works of other comedians, both from Spoken Giants and elsewhere. We do not have an agreement with Spotify, and this must be an indication they know that they don't have all the rights in place to serve this content. We are working to contact Spotify to determine what the issues are and respond accordingly."
Then, as other comedians and comedy fans started talking about this on social media late last year, Spoken Giants itself posted a statement to its Twitter account. It said, "Spoken Giants did not demand or even request that Spotify take down any comedy content. Spoken Giants wants the jokes written by the comedians it represents to be heard and enjoyed by as many people as possible across as many platforms as possible. Spoken Giants just wants comedians to be paid for the jokes they write, just like songwriters get paid for the songs they write. Spotify unilaterally decided," they went on, "to take the content down on the night before Thanksgiving." So now you're getting context of when exactly this happened. "Just as everybody was sitting down in the US for a 4-day holiday." So basically, this comedy rights company said, "Just as we were all about to slip into a food coma for a few days, all of our content disappeared from Spotify. It's unfortunate that some record labels are being negatively impacted by Spotify's decision to take comedy content down simply because Spoken Giants is trying to get Spotify to pay comedians for the jokes they write." And then this statement from Spoken Giants concluded, "Bottom line, we do not know when or if Spotify will put this comedy content back on its service. For now, millions of fans of great comedy are unable to hear their favourite comedians on Spotify because Spotify refuses to pay comedians for the jokes they write. Spotify pays songwriters when their songs are played, but doesn't pay comedians when it plays the jokes comedians write. We think all creators should be paid. Period."
Around about that time, the comedian Lewis Black was being interviewed by Time magazine and he chipped in on the debate. He said, "I in no way represent all of the comedians on Spotify, but I do believe that all of them should be paid for the writing that they have done and not just for the performance of what they wrote. It has taken a long time for comedy to be recognised as an art form. Therefore, Spotify should recognise that a joke is as powerful as a lyric of a song, which they do pay for." I mean, also, you could say obviously some stand-ups have other people helping them write jokes and it would be a way for people who are like not on stage performers to get paid. Although that would mean everyone would have to keep track of what jokes they wrote. And also stand-up comedians would have to admit that they don't write all of their jokes, all of things that might be difficult. But anyway, Spotify did respond to the removal of some of its comedy content as a result of this rights dispute. It said in a statement, "Spotify has paid significant amounts of money for the content in question and would love to continue to do so. However, given that Spoken Giants is disputing what rights various licensors have, it's imperative that the labels that distribute this content, Spotify and Spoken Giants, come together to resolve this issue to ensure this content remains available to fans around the globe."
So as we said, all of that happened late last year, around about Thanksgiving, turns out. But back to last week's lawsuits against Pandora, all of which involve comedians or the estates of comedians that are allied to the other of these companies that are set up to represent comedy rights, which is called Word Collections. Noting how comedy content is streaming on both the main Pandora platform, so that's the free platform, and its premium on-demand service, but without any licenses covering the literary works in that comedy, those lawsuits that were filed last week said, beginning in or about August of 2020, Word Collections contacted Pandora in an effort to negotiate a licensing agreement for various copyright owners. From that initial contact, and on an ongoing basis over the course of the following year, Word Collections made numerous efforts on behalf of its clients to engage Pandora in good faith negotiations, but it said to no avail. It then went on, while Pandora's counsel wrote on the 14th of September 2021 to advise that counsel would respond with Pandora's position about unlicensed spoken word content appearing on Pandora's platform, no substantive response from Pandora or its counsel has been sent or received. And as a result of that, that's why the litigation was filed.
Interestingly, the lawsuits also note that prior to SiriusXM's acquisition of Pandora in 2018, the previously standalone Pandora business used to mention the issue around unlicensed spoken word content in its annual filing with the US Securities and Exchange Commission. So in those reports, the lawsuit says, Pandora admitted in its risk factors every year that it performs spoken word comedy content absent a specific license from any performing rights organisation, and it has never obtained a license for the underlying literary works for the sound recordings of spoken word comedy content that it streams. Pandora further admitted, the lawsuit says, that it could be subject to significant liability for copyright infringement and may no longer be able to operate under its existing licensing regime.
So all of that was in the lawsuits that were filed last week. Pandora is yet to respond to this litigation. But it has to be said, if these cases do get to court, they will be very interesting test cases on all of this. Meanwhile, as I already alluded to, any streaming service with comedy content is probably also a potential target for similar action. And that's before you consider how much comedy content there is on all the social media and user upload platforms, which seemingly would also need to have licenses for the words, the scripts, the literary works in those comedy routines. So there could be an awful lot of litigation and licensing talks and comedy copyright chatter to come. Who knows? I mean, maybe we need to have a spin-off podcast where all we talk about is comedy rights and comedy litigation and all of that. Although, if I remember rightly, was it on last week's set list where I was talking about having a spin-off podcast covering NFT litigation?
So we're going to rebrand this podcast as an NFT podcast.
Is that what I was going to do? That's all right then. If we make set list,
maybe it could be NFT and comedy.
Well, if we made set list an NFT litigation podcast, maybe there would be time to have a spin-off on comedy litigation. So if the entire music industry could stop doing stuff for a couple of years, then we can focus on those other projects.
Yes. Well, we're not going to turn this into an NFT podcast. So let's not even talk about that. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, trying to ignore anything I might have said just a moment ago, let's get back to NFT litigation, or at least potential NFT litigation, with a quick update on one of those stories that we discussed last week. So, the Recording Industry Association of America has sent a legal letter to lawyers representing Hitpiece, the music NFTs website that became a major talking point in the music community recently for all the wrong reasons. The trade group's letter was both a cease and desist on behalf of its members and a demand for information about all the outfit's activities and revenues to date.
So let's do a very quick recap on what we discussed last week. The Hitpiece website was promoting for sale non-fungible tokens, good old NFTs, which were linked to a whole load of different artists and songs. The NFTs that were up for sale were not actually linked to any music files, so MP3s or anything like that, but were seemingly connected to artwork that is attached to each of the songs that they were promoting NFTs for, and everyone seems pretty certain that they were actually grabbing all of that artwork off the Spotify platform. Now, as we discussed last week, artwork, photography, illustrations, anything that is slapped on the front of an album, or was in the olden days, stuck in the app these days, I guess, All of that is protected by copyright, just like the songs and recordings that the artwork is accompanying, which means that if any website is going to start making NFTs linked to artwork, or even just posting artwork on an NFT website, all of that would need to be licensed, probably from record labels. They're usually the people that would control the rights to the artwork, certainly for signed artists. And Hitpiece didn't have any of those deals in place with any labels, any artists, or anyone.
Now, as the music community became aware of Hitpiece and talk of litigation from labels and artists started to make its way around the social networks, the NFT site went down, replaced with a short statement saying, "We started the conversation and we're listening." But that doesn't mean that Hitpiece and its founders, Rory Felton and Michael Berrin, can't necessarily be held liable for copyright infringement that had already occurred on the Hitpiece website, especially in the US, where copyright owners can sue for so-called statutory damages rather than damages actually linked to any monies lost or gained as a result of the infringing activity. And with that in mind, the RIAA wants to ensure that all information about Hitpiece's activities to date is stored.
So yes, as we said, the trade body sent this letter. It actually went to a lawyer who is seemingly representing Hitpiece and its founders. And that legal letter said, "As you are no doubt aware, your clients, through the Hitpiece website, have been engaged in the systematic and flagrant infringement of the intellectual property rights of the record companies and their recording artists on a massive scale. Using artist and track names, copyrighted album art, and other protected images, all without the permission of the rights owners, your clients have offered at auction and sold NFTs, promising ownership in a unique song recording and the ability to create a digital display of album artwork associated with their favourite music, with a one-of-a-kind, non-fungible token of the artwork. Many of these unique song recordings," that's the term that the Hitpiece were using, "and the associated artwork are those owned or exclusively controlled by the record companies."
Noting that the Hitpiece website was taken down earlier this month, the letter went on, "This does not absolve them of liability for their prior conduct. Accordingly," it said, "we demand that your clients immediately, one, cease and desist from any further infringement of the rights of the record companies and their recording artists. Two, keep the Hitpiece website offline and inaccessible to the public. Three, provide us with an accounting of all revenue. And four, provide us with a complete list of every NFT, along with all artwork and text associated with each NFT that was ever offered for auction on the Hitpiece website. Your clients are liable to the record companies and their artists for damages under each of the legal claims identified above, among others," the letter added. "Please contact me as soon as possible to confirm that your clients will comply with these demands and to discuss an appropriate resolution. In the meantime, I trust that your clients appreciate their legal obligation to preserve all documents and other evidence that is in any way related to this matter."
Now, as we discussed last week when we were going through all of this, it seems likely that the buyers of any NFT on the Hitpiece site wouldn't actually get any rights linked to or over the artwork that was connected with the NFT. I mean, obviously they couldn't because they hadn't licensed any rights to do so. But even if they had done deals with artists and labels and they were a bit more legit, nevertheless, when a fan bought an NFT on the site, they wouldn't actually be buying any rights in relation to the artwork. They might get a JPEG or a link to a JPEG of the artwork, but what they're actually buying is the rights to say that they have rights over the artwork within the Hitpiece website, and that would all be logged on the blockchain, which, I mean, might sound like a bit of a nonsense thing to want to buy, but actually quite a lot of the music-related NFT drops that we've seen over the last year, that is kind of what they are selling. All of that said, some music NFT websites have been accused of being quite misleading when they're telling fans what they're buying, so that maybe fans possibly actually do think that they're getting some actual exclusive content, maybe rights over that content, maybe even owning the copyright in that content. That's not what Hitpiece was selling. It's not what most music NFT sites are selling. But the RIAA letter added that, on top of everything else, the slightly confusing language on the website was also a problem. In fact, in the letter, it noted that Hit Piece, once everything got controversial, had actually said that they were not selling any access or rights to any actual music. So elsewhere in its letter, the RIAA noted the limitations on what an NFT buyer might be getting had they bought an NFT from the Hit Piece website. Also, the fact that Hit Piece was very adamant that there would be no song or recording file linked to the sale. So not only would there not be any rights over a music file, there wouldn't even be a music file. And they said that based on the language that had been used on the Hit Piece website, that they thought that possibly the official sales pitch of Hit Piece likely amounts to yet another form of fraud, they said.
The RIAA says that it sent the legal letter partly to stop Hit Piece itself from infringing the rights of labels and artists, but also as a warning to any other NFT startup thinking of selling tokens somehow connected to the music industry's songs, recordings, artwork, or artist brands without first getting all the required permissions from labels, artists, and other rights owners. The RIAA's COO, Mitch Glazier, said, "As music lovers and artists embrace new technologies like NFTs, there's always someone looking to exploit their excitement and energy. Given how fans were misled and defrauded by these unauthorized NFTs and the massive risk to both fans and artists posed by Hit Piece and potential copycats, it was clear we had to move immediately and urgently to stand up for fairness and honesty in the market."
So there you go, a very quick update on a story that we talked about on last week's Setlist. We don't usually do updates that quickly on Setlist, do we, following on 1 week to the next?
No, not really, no. Maybe we should.
Maybe we could become a rolling news channel for the music business. Talking of which, breaking news.
Yes.
Following up from a story which we ran, well, we didn't really run, about 25 minutes ago, I think.
Yes, okay.
On February the 11th, 2022, that's today, as we're recording this, it would be, you know, a couple of days ago as this podcast goes out. A year ago, if you're listening to this podcast a year after we publish it.
But, yes.
Good to be clear. On February the 11th, 2022, the UK's Competition and Markets Authority provisionally cleared Sony Music Entertainment's acquisition of AWOL and its neighbouring rights business. Sony Music Entertainment welcomes the CMA's provisional determination that its acquisition of AWOL raises no competition concerns, and in doing so, its recognition of the competitive and dynamic nature of the UK music market, says a Sony Music Entertainment spokesperson. So, there you go. I've already got a few quotes in my inbox responding to that, some very speedy people, but we'll hold that off because we, you know, I think at the start of the podcast, we kind of plugged that you should check out the CMU Daily for updates on this. So we don't want to give it all away now. So check your CMU Daily on Monday, what will that be? The 14th of February, 2022. And we will definitely have an update there. On this announcement from the CMA on the AWOL acquisition and various other entities' responses to it.
Yes, a little Valentine's Day treat for you. Along with this podcast, of course, which will be arriving on Valentine's Day, and you can listen to it with your partner over dinner on the evening of Valentine's Day. That would be very romantic. Congratulations on your continued relationship, if indeed it now is continuing. But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed on this edition, even news that broke while we were recording, go to the show notes for this edition, which you'll find either in your podcast player right now or at setlistpodcast.com. Links there on everything you can read to your heart's content. While you're in your app, if you are, hit the subscribe button, rate and review the show. That's very helpful. If you want to talk to us about anything at all, maybe not how listening to our podcast on the evening of Valentine's Day broke up your relationship, but anything else, it's setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Moulton, Chris Cook, and for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.